Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, parents, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Tap into the pulse of today's young folks on 411 Teen with a conversation with Matthew Kinslow about his recent book, Unstoppable, How One Person with Autism is Never Giving Up on His Lifelong Dream to Become a Teacher and Worldwide Influence. Matthew, welcome to 411 Teen.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so looking forward to talking with you. What was it that inspired you to write Unstoppable?
In 2022, I took both rounds of student teaching, so it was two semesters. Mm-hmm. And toward the end of it, I was reflecting on my journey as a student teacher, the ups and the downs, the positives and the overcomings that I've had. And by late 2022, I knew that I was going to be, I knew I was going to get the credential. My professors at Vanguard knew that I was going to get the credential. So I thought that my story would be encouraging to a lot of people. And so I put it to words and had it published.
Well, it definitely was encouraging. I was very moved by it, and it was very empowering. You have written two books. Writing a book is a huge accomplishment. So kudos to you. But what was the process like? Can you take us through the process? There may be some listening who are interested in writing a book. So if you don't mind, would you share that process, you know, with us just briefly, whatever, you know, you can share with us, things, important points that you think maybe folks need to know about writing a book?
Yes, I'd be happy to share. I always knew that I wanted to write. I was writing since elementary school, but I never got anything published. And then when I got to college, I started writing again and creating a story where the character has autism. So I was pouring out a lot of my life into this character. And I guess for writing, I'd always encourage, like, get a notebook or something to write notes so that you could follow the storyline and get all your thoughts down. And then after you write something, give it a few days, come back to it and read it again for flow. You may probably have to do some editing just to make sure it sounds right. And then I decided to do the royalty published route. So I hired an agent and he found a publishing house. And long story short, no pun intended, I got my first book published in 2019.
Wow. Well, you know, congratulations. You've done a very good job. And I know it's Unstoppable, you know, just was written very well. And I had a good feel for exactly what you were experiencing. So, again, I thank you for the book. Share your journey, your personal journey with autism. For the listening audience, I don't think a lot of people really have a real grasp of what autism spectrum disorder is about. And we have you who are on the spectrum, and I think, you know, it would be very informative and helpful for you to just share what your journey was, what it was all about. I mean, you do share it in the book. It took you a while before you got to the point that you knew wanted to be an educator. So share it.
Yeah. When I was three, the administrator of my mom's work told my mom that I wasn't speaking properly. And so I was subsequently diagnosed with a speech delay, which followed the preschool intervention program. And then after preschool, I had 3 years of special education or special day classes, in the middle of which I got a diagnosis of autism. So I had RSP, which is like special education. It's resource specialist program, and speech therapy. But I was mainstreamed in third grade. So I was in like a normal class setting with more students, but I had pullouts. So I went to speech and I went to RSP, and that lasted up until high school. When I got to high school is when I was like, I was formally told exactly what I was diagnosed with, and that's when my life made sense at that point. And toward the end of high school, I became an advocate and started speaking about what autism is like.
During those periods, I mean, when you were in high school, did you experience any difficulty in communicating, any difficulty in establishing friends? How did your peers respond to you? Do you feel like you were ostracized at any point? I mean, how did the kids respond to you?
At first in kindergarten, there were a couple of classmates that yelled at me, wanted me to go away, and I couldn't understand why. I had neighbors who were my age who would vote me out of their presence when I tried to like tag along. But I at the same time made friends throughout elementary school. And by middle and high school, I found that students were like the majority of students were more understanding of who I was, of who I am. And I think the struggles were more academic, like the struggles that I've had was like homework and test taking and reading took a long time for me. But I was still shy at the same time to hang out with my friends, but I've had friends.
Okay. How do you feel your journey on the spectrum shaped your path as an educator? Do you think that influenced you at all?
Yeah, I'd say to an extent, I believe that anybody, like anyone, could succeed, even academically, if they put their mind to it. But sometimes we need to differentiate instruction. Sometimes we need to have patience. But I believe that they could succeed.
Okay. You know, you have a master's degree in education, two science degrees, and a full math credential. What motivated you to pursue education? I mean, when did you recognize that, hey, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want, I want to go into education. When did you recognize that passion for education and teaching?
Well, there was a time in my life when I did want to go into the medical field, but I've always wanted to do education since early elementary school, like probably first grade, give or take. I remember coming home from school and just pretending to be the teacher, teaching the lessons that my teacher taught me. And I liked the idea of teaching. And in 11th grade, it came back. And from there, I knew that that's who I wanted to be, was a teacher.
Well, has your autism influenced your teaching style or your connection with students? How has it impacted that?
I feel like my autism is giving me like sympathy and empathy of what people might be going through. And in the credential program, we learned about differentiated instructions and helping students succeed. And I would be glad to take the extra time to help some students succeed. Like they could ask me questions, like if I were to, like when I become a teacher, I'd be open for them to ask me questions to help them understand better if they need to.
What were some of the biggest challenges you faced as a student teacher?
I'm very thankful that, the students and my mentor teacher were very supportive of my endeavor. I'd say the challenge was, I guess, more communications with my mentor teacher. Especially toward the end, there were, I guess, a couple of misinterpretations. But she worked with me and she helped me out. And another, challenge was filling out the TPA, which is like the teacher's performance assessment. You have all of these things you have to give to the state. You have to write all these things to prove that you could be a competent teacher.
Mm-hmm. Describe for the listening audience what it's like to be on the autism spectrum disorder.
Well, within the past 20 years, I've seen the pros on one hand and the cons on the other hand, and there's ups and downs, and some of the negative include it's hard to concentrate because my mind keeps on remembering a whole bunch of things, or it might be wondering what's going to happen next week or next year. Mm-hmm. And then I had a speech delay. I was shy. I was more shy than I am now, but and then I've also had my share of being teased for having autism. Having autism, it comes with social challenges, being teased, even in recent years too. But then there's like the flip side where it's easy for us to remember things. And everyone with autism is unique and different. But for me personally, it was easy for me to find patterns and numbers and dates. And I like had the presidents memorized by middle school.
How did you, let me say, navigate various situations where people may not have understood? For example, you said that you were teased, you know, you were challenged socially. Share with us how you navigated that, how you maneuvered, made it through that kind of situation. What would you do?
At first, I didn't understand why, and I was holding it in for several years. And from there, it just kept on piling. But later on in life, I realized, you know, first, we shouldn't stop doing what we're called to do because of what other people said. And then from there, I also believe that forgiveness is key. And I just forgive. I believe in the power of forgiveness and to be kind. And like, if these people stumble, if they fall, I would help them. I mean, I don't hate them, but I'm still a little sad for what they've done.
Okay. So you were able, I mean, I've applaud you. I think you've definitely done an exemplary job, but I just wonder just what it was that helped you to get to that point, how you were able to get there. And you again have been outstanding. We are coming up on a break, so we're going to take a break very shortly. But when we come back, I'd like us to explore why you think people fail to understand about neurodiversity. We're going to take a brief break. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I am talking with Matthew Kinslow via the Zoom platform. And Matthew, you are in California, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, glad to have you back again. For my listening audience, Matthew is a very dynamic individual. He is on the autism spectrum disorder, and that's what we are talking about. What is it that you feel people fail to understand about neurodiversity?
Neurodiversity is just accounting for the uniqueness of our brain, our mind, how it processes information and such. And in my observation, a lot of people seem to be understanding more and more of it. And in my observation, it seems like it's going up, but that some people, that there still needs to be more learning and acceptance, but I find that it's positively going up.
Okay. What do you think that we could do? I mean, how do you think, for example, teachers, you've been in the public school system, what can they do to enhance one's understanding of neurodiversity? Are there things, are that, you know, just even everyday things communities can do so that folks will be a little bit more aware of what it means?
Yeah, I've seen as a student teacher and as a substitute teacher, teachers in schools promoting acceptance that And it's also saying that there are people that learn differently, that appear different. And again, I've seen a lot of differentiated instruction. We've learned differentiated instruction in the credential program. I've seen schools bring in talks about, neurodiversity, mental health awareness, autism awareness, and such. And I am on that side of people who go to schools doing assemblies, and I volunteer doing assemblies mm-hmm. all across Orange County. And I talk about my life with autism, the ups and the downs, my encouragements, and how to include one another.
Were there moments of doubt when you questioned whether you could succeed as a teacher? And if so, how did you overcome them? How did you cope with them?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if I really doubted. I just believed it. It's like a feeling that was inside me. I knew I was destined to be a teacher. I knew I could do it. Mm-hmm. And it was just in me. I just knew I could do it.
Well, share with us some of your proudest moments during your training.
There's a few students. I'm thankful that the students were accepting toward me. And sometimes when I made a mistake, of course, I own up to it. I apologize. I say, sorry, I misspoke, or I gave the wrong worksheet. And there are students that said, don't worry about it. There are students that said, oh, don't worry, Mr. Kinslow. We know that you're just learning how to be a teacher and such. And for lessons, I mean, I guess you'd say I'm proud of a couple of lessons because of how students responded to it. I did a lesson about completing the square in mm-hmm. quadratics, and because I student taught math, and I brought construction paper. I showed them visually what completing the square looked like. There is another lesson that I did about functions, and I made use of the students' birthdays because mm-hmm. I had all the students' birthdays memorized, because that's it's easy for me to find the patterns and to memorize the mm-hmm. Birthdays. So I used that. And at the end, they said that was a very impressive lesson. So.
Oh, wow. Well, I think you've kind of answered. You might want to add some to this question. But overall, it sounds like your students really enjoyed you. And that's what I was going to ask you. How did the students respond to you? Is everybody accepting?
Well, not everybody, but I'd say that most students across the district, whether I'm substituting or back when I was a student teacher, yeah, most of them were very accepting.
Okay. And how did you deal with those who weren't?
That's a very good question. I mean, there's nothing I could really do unless they're doing something. Mm-hmm. Unless they're like bullying somebody else, then I'd have to step in. But I just offer
that. Did you have
that,
any strategies, I guess, maybe, that you might want to share? Because, I mean, you've done an excellent job. I'm just wondering, it's just been fantastic how you have mastered all of this. You got your master's and whatever. And I know that you got to have some hiccups here and there. And maybe you had strategies, maybe you didn't, as to those students who were not as accepting.
Yeah, I've put some focus on those students and offered to help throughout the day, or just gave them time to just do their worksheet or homework or something. But if I saw that they needed help, I mean, as a teacher, I still went up and helped them out.
Okay, all right. As you transition from college to student teaching, what were the barriers that you may have encountered?
The barriers of
just making the change,
Okay, like I'm going going from university to mm-hmm. the credential program.
Right, right.
Okay, yeah. Well, I just I applied and got accepted, and it was kind of like school, but it was school specifically teaching how to teach, and then you go on site, mm-hmm. and then you're the teacher. helping out. So I just find it was a camaraderie. I didn't really seem to experience any barriers.
Okay. All right. Did you have any, and you may not have had any, I mean, it may have just kind of flowed with you. I'm thinking, did you have any strategies that you may have used to connect with the students?
Yeah, in my first semester, it was about using student assets, like getting to know your students. And we had the credential program encouraged us to make a questionnaire and get to know like the interest of the students and then build off the interest. And there were a couple of moments where I felt like I could have, but just didn't use it. But for example, there's students that liked water polo and, or any sports that could be modeled by quadratic equations. So I could have used that as my in my lessons.
Well, now, I know you experienced some discrimination and some bias that you encountered as an autistic educator. Talk about that. Share that with us. Share it with the listening audience. You know, I think making people aware of things they do or things they say or messages they send, maybe unconscious messages, will help bridge that gap in understanding and acceptance.
The majority of the discrimination or teasing that I've had was basically was mostly outside of the credential program, like out in the neighborhood or out on social media. People, people making harsh messages against me, or I'm in the neighborhood and people may laugh at me or call me names or yell or cuss at me. There was one time in 2022 when a person outside a convenience store started to name call me, and so I started to stand up for once and peacefully explain. I was about to explain, I have autism, but he almost beat me with a skateboard, so I left. So at that point, and then, but that's some of the things that I faced. Thankfully, I didn't really face that as a student teacher with any of the students or faculty.
But outside of the schools, it sounds like you experienced more discrimination and bias than you did within the school environment.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think schools and the education systems are doing enough to support neurodiverse teachers? Because I think, you know, that people just don't know and they don't understand. And if they understood, there would be a different response. I might be wrong. I mean, I'm just thinking that if you, whenever you don't understand something, then, you know, kids are likely to make fun of it. Or so do you think that there are things that could be taught, discussed in the schools or in the education system for the teachers and for the students?
Yes, I believe so. I don't think it's 100% perfect yet, and not that would be perfect, but I find that we're on the right track. But at the same time, I still witness, even in my own district, students making fun of people for being in special education because they feel like they just don't understand. And sometimes I have the ability to, stop them from teasing people, and explain. But something I'm promoting all across Orange County is my volunteer assemblies. And that's the reason I volunteer these assemblies, is because I know that it's needed to be heard. And after every assembly, people tell me, thank you. This is a very important message of inclusion and to bring awareness and acceptance.
Well, explain your volunteer assemblies. What are they? How are they conducted? Just explain it to us so that everybody listening will know what a volunteer assembly is, what you do, what occurs in a volunteer assembly, when it's held. Just give us kind of a picture of a volunteer assembly.
Yeah, so I go to the school and give a little introduction, and I talk about the pros and cons of autism, but and it's about 20, 25 minutes, and I keep the students listening with and engaged with juggling. So I bring my juggling analogy, and my juggling analogy says, if anything drops in life, and I literally drop one on purpose, then bend down, pick it up, keep going. I have a science demo analogy about not bottling things up inside. And so I make a cloud in a bottle and talk about releasing the cloud, i.e. find someone that you could trust and talk things out. Don't hold things inside. And then I have a couple of card trick analogies, like what it may feel like to be shy when you feel like you're alone, but then you realize that your friends are there the entire time. And I have another card trick analogy where it shows the words "I can't," but really quick it changes to "I can." Like that's how quick it could be to choose to go from something I think is more negative to a more positive mindset, telling yourself that "I can." And then at the end, I do some juggling finales and a sleight of hand trick at the end.
Okay. Well, I can see how that would be the really catching the attention of the students. And if I remember correctly in your book, that was one of the high points, that the students loved those volunteer assemblies. But you also did those, some of those things when you were in class, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how did the volunteer assemblies evolve? And when do they occur? I mean, how does that work?
I always wanted to do assemblies, and I thought that my first book could kind of help me get around the school district, but then the pandemic happened and everything was shut down. But now, since things were opening back up, I was starting to ask like the school district and schools if I could speak. And then, long story short, I got invited to a couple places, and then they spread my name to other schools, and then I went to their schools, and on it went. And unfortunately, there's a lot of schools. My goal is every school in Orange County, public and private, but it just depends on what's available and what time they have. So I think I know I could do more schools, but I'm not yet asked by all the schools.
Okay. What would you, since you've been on both sides, what would you like to see changed in how the educational institutions sort of approach neurodiversity? I mean, for example, when you were in school, not so much doing student teaching, did the curriculum include maybe a course on exceptional education or neurodiversity that is required for everyone? Not for those who may be going into special education or exceptional education. I'm just wondering, since you've been there and you've been through the whole process, what would you think would be an effective way of getting the teachers to understand who you are and what you're about, and who students like you are and what you're about and what you can do? Because if I remember correctly, some of the teachers, you know, weren't sure at first if you could handle it. So where do you think is the breakdown? What is happening there?
Well, I haven't seen any like required courses that students need to take regardless on neurodiversity, but I do believe to an extent that it's really important to at least become aware. And I think neurodiversity could be taught with a lot of different courses. Like there could be a unit where you mention it and dialogue about it. Mm-hmm. And I would say like schools, like K through 12 and post-secondary education could emphasize more on neurodiversity, because knowing neurodiversity and accepting us spans across the entire, like everything, not just the teaching field.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, I think, but I say the teaching field because that's where you see the kids. And if you have not been at least exposed or trained to work with these kids, or at least be able to identify them. I'm just wondering if there's a breakdown in the whole education system. And you just said, you know, that you really didn't get any special training on working with special kids. I know that one can go down the avenue of being in special education. And so, yes, most of their curriculum is going to be geared toward that. But I'm thinking about someone who's going to teach, I don't know, math or, you know, going the regular route. If they are exposed to that, and it doesn't sound like they are, is what you're saying.
Well, they are to an extent, I would say. Because in the credential program, we learn how to differentiate instruction, which means to tailor our instructions so that all students could learn and how to check for understanding.
Let me ask you about your book then. We're probably going to have to stop. We're going to take a break. But who have been some of your better mentors along the way? And why? Why do they stand out?
I'd say my mother and grandfather, who was there all my life, who has been there all my life. My teachers who encouraged me. The Royal Rangers program, which is like Boy Scouts. It's a faith-based ministry, and they really took me under their wing and gave me a chance. And I, of course, have to say my professors at Vanguard.
Okay. So you've had a large support system is what I hear you say.
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's about that time to take another break. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your book, some of the messages that you hope people take away. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, I'm featuring Matthew Kinslow. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I am talking with author, student teacher, advocate, Matthew Kinslow. And Matthew, again, I am very honored to have you on the program. Talk about Unstoppable, your book. What are the key messages that you want people to take away from the book?
Yeah, I'm hoping that it would encourage aspiring teachers or aspiring any profession, disability or not, and that this is a story about a person that has always had the joy and the passion to teach, but have not always given the full range of opportunities for whatever reason. Has overcome setbacks, and which include discrimination, but also includes other things. But that I persevered, and I completed the student teaching, and I became a substitute teacher, where a lot of students actually requested me to come back throughout the district. And I just had believed that this could be encouraging and motivating to people, so that they could not give up on what they want to do in life.
Do you have any insights as to what people, particularly teachers, can do differently that will encourage folk to first of all, aspire to be teachers, but one who can become determined and know how to overcome adversity? How did you do that? What was it what sparked you? What kept you going? Because it wasn't always easy.
Right, it wasn't always easy. And there were times in my life, honestly, where I questioned, like, what am I doing? Like, if I'm going to be treated the way I am or this or that, then why am I pushing? But there's some it's like a force inside me, within me, that propelled me to continue.
Yeah, and I admire that. I'm just trying to see, what would you say to someone who was following in your footsteps, to someone who has a disability, who's on the spectrum, what would you say to them to encourage them to continue to pursue their dreams, to not let their dreams be thwarted by mean, insensitive comments?
I would tell them to, I would say, don't allow the label of autism or whatever disability to stop you, whatever people said about you or whatever you felt or how hard things might be, just don't allow it to stop you. Sometimes we got to learn patience. We got to learn to go through things instead of around things. I mean, I spent 5 years at a 2-year college, and so some things just take a little bit longer, but I just encourage not to give up and to be yourself at the same time. We're all unique. Don't try to be someone that you're not. Just be yourself. And sometimes you just got to come to terms with that. But I believe that disability or not, I believe anyone could do whatever they set their heart to mind to do as long as it's practical.
Yeah, but you did have a lot of support. And I think I mentioned this earlier, and I wanted us to elaborate on it. Communication often is an issue with individuals who are on the spectrum. Sometimes they misread the other person, the person they're talking to. Sometimes they misread the emotions that the other person may be expressing, those nonverbal types of things. How'd you overcome that? How did you do that? What was it that, you know, I'm sure you had situations where you didn't quite understand what the person was saying, or you misread, you took their tone, you know, the tone of the voice. I find it really remarkable that you did that, because that's often the problem, a big problem, with individuals who are on the spectrum and their communication and being able to read correctly the other individual to whom they may be, you know, communicating with.
It did take several years to ascertain what other people were talking about, to understand sarcasm, like what's joke, like what's a joke and what's real, you know, shame to admit, there were times when even close people to me, friends, and would say something, and I took it the wrong way, and
that's exactly,
I got a little upset,
I mean,
about it.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. How did you overcome that? Excuse me. How were you able to move beyond that? I mean, you must have mastered it, because you are out there doing your thing now.
Yeah, it's good question. I mean, I just knew inside that my friends really would not want to do anything to hurt me or to tear me down. And I just, hard to explain, but I just learned different sarcasm or different expressions of what people say and realize, well, it's not necessarily supposed to be mean or anything.
Okay. All right. I wondered, did you use any prompts? Were there any, you know, cues that you used to understand, you know, what a certain expression meant, or different tones of voice, what those tones meant? How would you interpret those things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've, I mean, like inflection of the voice, facial cues, like nonverbal facial cues. It's hard to explain, but I just, over the years, just was able to differentiate.
Well, what has been the response from educators and students and readers to you? How have they responded to you? What have you seen?
Well, for students, teachers, and staff, like principals, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. I mean, there's principals and teachers that compliment me of being a good sub, and students saying best sub or something like that. And it makes me feel very good. And I appreciate the encouragement and knowing that I'm I'm contributing. And then for parents, I've ran into parents that realized that I was the person that subbed or student taught to their child.
Mm-hmm.
And they thanked me. One of them stopped me at Target one day and said that I subbed for her daughter, and her daughter has autism, but because I was there, she's now motivated.
Ah, I bet that was made you feel good. That's very rewarding to hear that kind of thing, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, where are you now? And when I say where are you now, I mean, have you gotten a full-time job? Are you pursuing a full-time teaching assignment? Or are you still part-time? Where are you? What's happening?
Yeah, not a full-time yet, but I'm currently a substitute teacher, a private math tutor. I'm like tutoring 6 days a week in mathematics. And then I'm trying to see how far I could go with assemblies. Again, my goal is every school in Orange County, public and private. So that might take a few years. So in the meantime, I plan to sub and tutor.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I recently talked to Vanguard University about being an adjunct math professor.
Mm.
And this fall, it's possible that this fall I might be able to teach a couple of courses to keep up the practice of teaching.
Well, I know that you said sometimes, what was it? Let me get it right. Sometimes we have to learn to go through things and not around things. And that people have hurt you, but it's propelled you to take a stand and to advocate. Would you elaborate on that or talk about that?
Yeah, that's a saying that I heard a few years ago, and I really liked it, to go through things instead of around things. I mean, people have a choice to like cheat and go around things so that they don't go through, you know, the storms, if you will.
Right.
But then at the end, you kind of get this imposter syndrome phenomena, or you're not ready or prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to have patience, and it's sometimes hard to accept, but you have to have patience and take your time.
Okay, all right. Do you plan to, what does the future hold for you? I mean, do you plan to write more books? What's next on the agenda for you?
Well, within the next few years, I'm hoping to land a full-time job, like middle school math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
While, you know, probably being like an adjunct professor in math. And then as far as books go, I'm not sure, maybe. I do have a trilogy written since my early college days, but I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to it or not yet.
Well, that led right into my next question, because we haven't talked about your first book. So talk about your first book. Just, you know, share, you know, the title and what it's all about. Because folks may be interested in that.
Yeah, my first book is Juggling the Issues. So I wrote the trilogy, which is fictional, but it's about a boy with autism. And I submitted that to the agent. And the agent told me, well, I think it's best to do a more autobiographical piece, a nonfiction piece first. And so that's how Juggling the Issues got started. And I describe it as an anthology or a collection of short stories. And Juggling the Issues, the chapters could be a pro of autism, a con of autism, or
mm-hmm.
or an organization that helped me or given me a chance in life.
I see. Okay. We're talking about your book and talking and talking, but I haven't even asked you. Where can one purchase your book? Where is your book? I mean, I'm talking with Matthew Kinslow, author of An Unstoppable, How One Person with Autism is Never Giving Up on His Lifelong Dream to Become a Teacher and a Worldwide Teacher. Where can we get this book, Matthew?
My books could be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or it could be ordered at any bookstore or library. And I would just put like Unstoppable Matthew Kinslow in the search bar, because there's a lot of products called Unstoppable. So.
Okay. In these last few minutes, what advice, and I want to get your advice, would you give to teachers? I'm going to get your advice to folks in the community, but let's start with teachers. What advice would you give to teachers working with individuals who may be neurodiverse?
I would say to just like keep up the good work, and advice is to continue to be there and show care for each student and each individual. And I'd say teach them life skills if they're able to, like if they're able to, like to advocate for themselves as well. And that's the advice that I also give to parents to,
okay,
to help teach, to help children, teenagers be able to be a bit more independent if they're able to.
Well, you jumped my question because, yeah, what do you think parents are missing with their neurodiverse children? You know, where can they change, or where can they take some extra steps from your perspective?
Yeah, from my perspective is to continue to show care and just like not give up and know that they're not alone. I follow a lot of people, especially on Instagram, a lot of families, a lot of parents talking about their advice and their struggles. But I would say just continue to show love and care, listen to the child, to the teenager, and to teach life skills to them. So for example, my mom taught me some tips on cooking, tips mm-hmm. on driving and such. So.
Mm-hmm. In these last few minutes, a couple questions. I think you've already shared where you can find your book. Do you have a blog or website or anything like that that listeners can follow you on? And you're such a dynamic individual, and I know you've written a couple books and what you have been in magazines. Is there anywhere people can follow you?
Yes, I post on social media, mainly YouTube, Instagram, X, TikTok, and Facebook mm-hmm. under my name, Matthew Kenslow. And I post videos or shorts or reels about life as an autistic, or my encouragements, or just describing what it's like living with autism.
Okay. And that's Matthew Kenslow, MattheWKenslow, correct?
Yes.
Okay, for those who are listening. What do you wish in these last, we have a couple minutes, that people in general, I'm not talking about teachers now or parents, just people in general in the community. You said most of your issues have been out in the community. What do you wish that they better understood about autism? Because I feel like if people understand, then that's half the problem right there.
Yeah, I just wish that people would take the time to educate themselves and to realize that if you see a person like walking in the neighborhood, like don't jump to conclusions. I mean, I've been again name called or cussed at by people that I never even met before. And it's like my heart goes out for them. I just want them to understand and to treat other people better. And I believe that when people treat others better, then they could start, you know, feeling worth in their life as well.
Share in this last minute, how does that make you feel when you encounter that kind of response to you? When you've done nothing, you're just as innocent, and you get cursed out. Or like you said, someone tried to beat you up with a skateboard. What does that say to you? How do you feel?
Honestly, just horrible, if I could be honest. Just, mm-hmm. you know, like, and sometimes it just loses my appetite, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're at the end. Is there any one message you want to leave with the audience? What would it be, you know, to our listening audience? What would you say to them before we close?
Yeah, I would reiterate, just don't allow the label of autism or anything to stop you. Don't allow what other people said about you to make you quit, and just choose to never give up on what you want to do and who you want to be in life. And again, I believe that behind the disability, we have a heart and a mind.
Wow. Matthew, it's been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and your life until this point. So thank you so much. And to my listening audience, hey, it's time out for this edition of 411 Team. And again, many thanks to Matthew Kinslow for sharing his story and the challenges and the experiences. Much appreciation to my listening audience for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.